if we think about this, there are animals out there that can take repetitive hits to the head. Look at the woodpecker. They take their tongue and they wrap it around their head so they can repeatedly beat a hole into a tree so they can set up their nest. Around our head is definitely not a tongue. All that we have separating our brain from our skull are three layers of what's called meninges, and there's no padding. None of that's going on. So if you were to hit your head, or this even brings up not necessarily hit your head, but have whiplash, what happens is the inside of your skull is going to come in contact with your brain because your brain is sloshing around and moving and even twisting inside your skull. And there isn't a lot of room to move around inside your skull. There's not a lot of space. But again, the meninges or the layers that that hold a protection around our brain, they're not very hard. They also don't have a lot of padding, and their job is to not necessarily protect your head from a hit to the head. It's to help provide nutrients and provide a couple other supportive roles, not necessarily go from 60 to zero in no time flat and expect your head to be okay. All right, everyone, the Dr. Alex Show is brought to you by Shed Light Cold Lasers. And Shed Light Cold Lasers has been a game changer for us at HML professionally and personally at home. Personally, on a personal note, I had a very bad bout of vertigo, and I got probably 85% there by going to a few different functional neurologists over the years to help me out with it. Then I bought this. And this is a game changer because, one, it's portable. That means I can take it to the office, use it on patients all day, make sure it stays charged, come on home, and then throw it in my pocket and use that home. And this is what cleared up my vertigo. Now, professionally, the way it's been the game changer for us in the office is that it has cut our results down by 50%. This can get used on just about anything. Any disease disorder that you can think of, it can pretty much get used on. Now, as far as how it has helped us out, it's cut everything down by 50% on our times. So when we're working with our kids with special needs, when we're working with our chronic neurological disorders, autoimmune diseases, to get those people into a good point that they're happy and that we're happy, times have been cut by 50%. You will definitely want to go check out shedlightcoldlasers.com. Or email Griswold at shedlightinformation@gmail.com, 518-338-6658. All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Dr. Alex Show. And today we're going to talk about concussions or traumatic brain injury, mild traumatic brain injury. If I start using words interchangeably, it's just so I don't sound like a broken record, but all of the principles are going to apply. And I figure let's talk about concussion or MTBI, mild traumatic brain injury, because I was just telling producer Nick, like, we're seeing more of it. And does that mean anything? Does that mean there's more concussions? Not necessarily. But at our office, we're seeing more of it because what's been going on is we've been practicing relatively in the same area for about 10 years now. So some of the kids that we'd see early on in life, they're now getting to be teens, and parents are dragging them back in after we did some brain work for maybe ADHD or dyslexia or something along those lines. And they're like, hey, can you work on concussions? And the kicker was four or five years ago, definitely not proficient in working with concussions. But over the last 3 years, I have personally spent a lot of time researching, learning from other people, and spending time learning techniques on getting people as right as possible after concussions. So I figured let's do a show on that, because the parents that are listening of our patients will want to know some of these ins and outs, or want to hear some of the logistics of concussion, because there's a lot of great new information out and a lot of standards have changed over the years. So when it comes to a hit to the head, like what Nick and I were just talking about, was if you're playing football back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, it was you got your bell rung or you got a stinger. shake it off and get back out there and play some more. Well, looking back, a lot of those times, those people may have had concussion or very, very severe concussion, or it was a repeated very minor concussion over and over and over again. And that can be why maybe those individuals now are having constant migraines and headaches and dizzy and balance problems and things along those lines. So then in 2016, the International Consensus Conference on Concussion, or the ICC, they came up with new guidelines. And what had happened was from 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s to through the 2000s, brain research came out just tremendously, just came out in droves. And now it's just coming out like floodgates. And what they had determined before 2016 was we have to rest. And around 2016, they were saying, yeah, we want to rest, or we need to rest. We need to put that individual in a dark room and let him rest. Well, then they were like, that's actually not the worst thing, but not the best thing. And what we need to do is actually get that person, not necessarily on the field, but get them active again under what's called sub-threshold symptoms. And just a fancy way of saying, we need to give you some rest for about 48 hours, 72 hours, take life relatively easy. Definitely not be going out on the field. But then after that, we got to start getting some basic physical therapies in and or aerobic exercise, but keep it below your threshold of symptoms. So let's say you have a child who just got a hit to the head, or you just had a hit to the head. All of this can apply to kids and adults. And you go and you get checked out, and the doctor might just say rest, just rest. And in a few weeks, you'll be fine. That is not the latest information. That is not the best advice. And fortunately, you're listening to this, which means you can get hopefully better care for yourself or that individual. Sorry. Oh, you're fine. I did not timestamp this. Hopefully you did.
Sorry.
No, you're good. Did you timestamp it? Or no. I guess you kind of got it.
Yeah. I'll find it. You might just go back maybe a little bit. I'm
cool.
Sorry. It was a weird.
Yeah, no worries. It's funny. Normally I can see like shadows and stuff, but I didn't pick up anything or glares. All right.
Sorry.
No problem. All right. So if your child, or for that matter, if you're an individual who's an adult or children, or child, it does not matter. This gets applied to everyone. If your child has a hit to the head and the doctor tells you it's just rest and go back in a few weeks, get back to it. That's not the best advice. The better advice and the latest understanding is we want to be able to rest for a few days, about 48 hours, maybe more. Then start getting some sub-threshold aerobic exercise in, along with some basic physical therapies. Or in this case, it'd be more vestibular system therapy to help that individual get some of their function back. Because when it comes to a concussion, I don't want to spend a lot of time on technicals and symptoms because everyone can look that up, but we're dealing with headaches and migraines and dizziness and nausea and even organic symptoms where people's digestion gets all out of whack. Their metabolism can be out of whack. They can start gaining weight and all sorts of other oddball situations that you wouldn't even equate to it. Like even loss of sleep can occur with these with a decent hit to the head. So with that latest understanding, they said, with the latest research, we got to get people out. So the long and short of this part of this show is got to get the person active again and get them out. Having them undergo the dark room protocol, that's not where it needs to be anymore. That's just some outdated outdated understanding of concussion or mild traumatic brain injury, and it's time to get that person moving as soon as possible. So then when it comes to concussion, there's quite a bit of controversy. If anyone wants to go back to around, was it 2015, 2016, the movie Concussion came out with Will Smith, the actor and musician or rapper or singer. And they depicted a storyline in which basically the NFL covered up what they knew about concussions and what it meant for their players. Not going into that, but that definitely sprung forward into the public's eye. Are we able to take hits to the head and get back to life? And we're kind of finding out like, nah, it's a bigger deal than we thought. And what I want to focus on is the whys, and then maybe that'll put it in perspective for people that are listening. So if we think about this, there are animals out there that can take repetitive hits to the head. Look at the woodpecker. They take their tongue and they wrap it around their head so they can repeatedly beat a hole into a tree so they can set up their nest. Around our head is definitely not a tongue. All that we have separating our brain from our skull are three layers of what's called meninges, and there's no padding. None of that's going on. So if you were to hit your head, or this even brings up not necessarily hit your head, but have whiplash, what happens is the inside of your skull is going to come in contact with your brain because your brain is sloshing around and moving and even twisting inside your skull. And there isn't a lot of room to move around inside your skull. There's not a lot of space. But again, the meninges or the layers that hold a protection around our brain, they're not very hard. They also don't have a lot of padding, and their job is to not necessarily protect your head from a hit to the head. It's to help provide nutrients and provide a couple other supportive roles, not necessarily go from 60 to zero in no time flat and expect your head to be okay. So with a hit to the head, regardless of if you hit an external source, if you had whiplash or not, that brain is sloshing around and it can be twisting. And then that leads to what is called hypothalamal shearing, which is the fancy way of saying your hypothalamus, which controls, doesn't control per se, but your brain fires down to the hypothalamus and it tells the hypothalamus, hey, you need to start releasing hormones to control this for your cardiovascular system, or this for the thyroid, or this for digestion, or this for reproduction. And the brain is telling that hypothalamus what to do to help maintain homeostasis, or a balance of resting and digesting and living life in a good calm state. And if you're going to sit there and have an unfortunate event where, again, your head hits an external source or not, that brain sloshing around, and essentially your brainstem, and at the very top of your brainstem is the hypothalamus, things get pulled and sheared and twisted. That's where a lot of the symptoms come from, and a lot of injuries come from with hypothalamal shearing that are very discouraging to patients at time and are very hard to fix because it takes a long time. Now, if you were to hit your head, like if I were to get in a front-end collision and bang my head on the steering wheel, let's say that airbag doesn't go off, and then maybe bang my head on the backside, what that's called is coup and counter-coup. So if I hit my head, boom, right on my forehead, that's called coup, and then the brain's going to go back, and then it's going to hit the backside, just like a whiplash motion of taking your neck and going back and forth. The coup and the counter coup will create symptoms. So if I hit the front of my head and that's my frontal lobe, that's going to create frontal lobe symptoms. I'm going to have maybe poor executive decision-making. I'm going to have impulse control. I'm going to have issues with working memory. And overall, I might have eye fatigue, like I can't be able to get my job done on the computer as well. Then in the back, I might have visual problems because that's the occipital lobe. And the occipital lobe is where vision is initially processed. So with all of that, that can occur with little hits to the head or big hits to the head. And that goes into the next point, which is what we're finding out is we don't want to minimize any hit to the head, because even if someone had a concussion where there's a brief loss of consciousness or no loss of consciousness, but their mental faculties basically paused, that is where someone can be just fine, honestly. There are plenty of situations that where that happens, and it happens, for instance, every day on a football field. Or that small little hit where no loss of consciousness, but the mental faculties took a pause, person came out of it, that person's life could be drastically disrupted. And what's the difference there? Well, it has to do with a lot of factors of what is the health of that person to begin with. What was their brain like to begin with? Did they already have concussions before this, which we'll go into? What was their overall health like? Did they have a lot of inflammation going on? Did they have a great diet or not diet? Was their physical attributes good or not good? If we're talking athletes, most of the time they are okay. But the state of which that person's brain and health is in general is overall going to determine that response. And that brings up prevention. When it comes to concussions, you know, with all of the athletes we work on, it's kind of funny. At HML, we don't see a lot of football players for concussions. It's kind of odd to say. What we see a lot of, though, are soccer players, gymnasts, cheerleaders, and then there's other oddball situations like volleyball players, baseball players. And even in baseball, we're not seeing them because they got hit by a pitch. It's because maybe they collided at home plate and their head went into the catcher's knee or something like that. And with a volleyball player, it's because they went up for the ball and their heads collided with their teammates or something along those lines. And with all of these, one huge determining factor that helps determine how well someone's going to respond to that hit to the head or not, and how well they get better, is actually neck strength. And a lot of the athletes that we work on with concussions are females. And I'm not saying anything, but that's just because most of the time a female athlete's neck is not as strong as a male's. Generally, us males have more muscle mass. We have more muscle mass for our body size. And part of that is neck strength and trapezius and levator strength that can help hold our head up and hold things in place. Because, again, it kind of goes back to this concept of you can have a hit to the head by not hitting your head on an external source. But if you can brace your neck, hold your head somewhat still, and while you're in the event that this occurred, like on the field or on the court, you're going to have a much better outcome than if someone has weak neck musculature. And probably one of the biggest things that we can do for our patients when we're working with people with concussions is we want to work on getting their symptoms down, but we want to also go into what do we need to do for prevention, and that is neck strength, 100%. So then that brings up the topic of multiple hits to the head. This is where it gets dicey and where it gets to be very discouraging for young athletes or even athletes who are in their prime getting paid to play their sports or whatever it is, and it might have to come up as having conversations about, we might have to cut this short. Otherwise, you may not know your grandkids' names one day. So some of the best research that's come out, and a lot of this is from Ivy League schools, Harvard is probably the leader in this, in these topics, is what multiple hits to the head do. And this is where the NFL was getting in hot water. And I never followed any of that, so I don't know what occurred. I know that a lot of people were suing a lot of people, and there's a lot of things getting thrown around. But this is probably where they got in hot water, because it is multiple hits to the head that is the most dangerous for someone. So what happens when we hit our head? On top of brain tissue getting stretched and elongated and sheared and twisted and moved around and mangled how it shouldn't be, we're having an inflammatory response occur. And for all my nerds out there, what happens is your brain has its own immune system, and it's going to turn on with a hit to the head, because only 10% of your brain is actually neurons that do stuff that make us humans. The other 90% of your brain are support cells, microglial cells, that for each neuron, there's 9 to 10 microglial cells that make sure that that neuron is happy. And I kind of joke about it, but just think about how high maintenance neurons are, and how maintenance our high maintenance our brains are. It needs 10 different cells to provide it what it needs. It's like having 10 different moms for one kid. Like, we got to make sure we got food. We got to make sure we got oxygen. Make sure we're stimulated. Make sure we're not too bored. Make sure we got our antioxidants. Make sure we got all of this going on. And it takes 10 of them. It's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing what our neurons are capable of. But they're for the most part, they're always firing, and they're always with us for hopefully our long, long lives of, you know, 80, 90, 100 or more years. So it kind of makes sense that we need all the support we can get for these neurons. So what happens is those neurons will get injured. There's inflammatory processes that occur with this inflammatory response. But the kicker is the immune system of the brain does not turn off by itself. It does not have a good off switch, if at all. So this inflammatory response turns on, and if it is not addressed nutritionally, or it can also get addressed with the correct brain rehab, then it, quite frankly, it could always stay on. And that can be what leads to some lingering symptoms of headaches and dizziness, or even oddball things, going back to weird digestive issues, or why am I holding on to this weight now? What's going on? And I'm always exhausted. And that can be because those neurons are inflamed, they're working overboard. And for instance, a brain that is stressed out and working overboard can lead to what's called dysautonomia. That's the fancy term for dis as in out of sorts, and autonomia, automatic. It means your autonomic or automatic nervous system is out of whack. So we have lost a balance of parasympathetic, resting, digesting, relaxing, and fight, flight, flee. And that balance of being ready for battle and relaxing has gone way out of whack, and we're ready to fight. And that autonomic portion of that, the portion of that nervous system there called the sympathetic nervous system, when it's always firing, will lead to fatigue. It's called neurogenic hypoglycemia. You're using way more glucose and way more calories to do things throughout the day with your brain than otherwise a healthy brain will do. Your brain weighs 3 pounds, but it takes about 20 to 25% of your caloric intake every day. Astonishingly massive amount of calories taken to run this thing between your ears, and it goes up with a hit to the head. So you might be fatigued, and if that is going on, then maybe we're still inflamed. And if I can get to the what to do's about that, then we'll get to that. Otherwise, the what to do's for nutrition and concussion can be found in online as well. So then this immune system turns on, doesn't turn off, and it can lead to more symptoms. Then what happens is, if it's really bad, your supporting cells, these microglia, they can change shape. A lot of them kind of look like your hand. It's got like a center with nucleus and all sorts of things to help that cell and other cells. And then it's got little fingers, dendrites or axons, to help sprout out and send nutrients or talk to other cells or do whatever it needs to do. Well, with a very bad hit to the head, or with multiple hits to the head, think of these microglial cells, these support cells, turning into like a hard-boiled egg. When you boil an egg, there's no going back. And it's not that that egg isn't useless, because it is. You can still consume it. You can still nourish your body with it. But it can't be used for other things like going sunny side up or over easy or whatever you want. It's no longer malleable. It is it is in the shape that it's going to remain the rest of its life. And it's not going to be as useful. It's not going to do its job nearly as well, if at all. And without one of the 9 to 10 support cells for a neuron that is that needs a lot of support, that's where we have continued and ongoing symptoms as well. And this changing of shape of our support cells is called microglial priming. As you can see, my own brain weakness is coming out. I'm fasting and I'm going longer than I normally do, so my blood sugar must be getting decently low. So anyway, with this priming, we have that change of shape, doesn't work as well, and cannot go back. And that priming occurs more and more with every successive hit to the head. So not only will a second hit to the head fire up that immune system again, but priming will take place and our support cells in our brain will start to prime non-linearly. So let's just say, for argument's sake, your first hit to the head, you had just, let's just say for one neuron, you had 2 cells that primed and they're no longer as useful as they should be. After that, it could be 3 or 4, 5 or 6 neurons because of the compounding effects of many hits to the head. It's like going from a small prairie fire to, unfortunately, right now, Maui is still on fire. It's like going from prairie to Maui, just not good. And that is another reason why individuals can have ongoing symptoms of, again, of fatigue, nausea, restlessness, inability to sleep, headaches, migraines, ongoing changes in personality and mood, because when it comes to these changes in brain function, it can happen anywhere. And if it happens in the frontal lobe, where that is where we are human, then we'll end up having personality changes. One of the most famous stories, he's not famous, but in the neuro world, he's famous. His name is Phineas Gage. And was this in the late 1800s here in America? Super nice guy. He was always known as the nicest guy around. Everyone wanted to be around him because he was awesome. Hardworking guy, took care of people in his life, all that good stuff. One day, was working, took a railroad spike to his forehead. It went right through. And we know this because we have pictures of his skull. And he survived it, which is unbelievable. So survived it, got patched up somehow, whatever those amazing doctors did back then. But after that, had a huge personality change. He was fighting, cussing, doing both at the same time. Complete reversal. He was just a complete jerk. And he was forever changed because of that. Now, if Phineas were around today and he had that happen and he survived that and he got into the right office, some of that personality could have come back just to be able to get that inflammatory response down and get his brain rewired. But back then, they were just lucky to have survived that and let alone not die of an infection of having a railroad spike go through your head. So that's probably the most drastic thing in history that we know of with a traumatic brain injury and what can happen with personality. But if you are listening to this and you've seen a personality change in someone after hits to the head and even everything else is okay, I would consider going and checking out a functional neurologist or someone who deals with concussions and get it looked at and see if there's something to be concerned about. So then the last couple things I want to touch on is why it should be taken serious. Because when it comes to brain health, we have this immune system that turns on but doesn't turn off, can go with ongoing inflammatory cascades that create symptoms over time, maybe add other hits to the equation and add stresses of life. What these Ivy League schools have found was the worst symptoms of even a single hit to the head show up. They show up 5 to 20 years later. And this is where some of you might be like gasping, because you could be someone, or you could know someone who had a pretty good hit and let's just say they were okay. But then 5 to 20 years later, everything else in life is fine. No other hits. All other factors, let's just say, for all intents and purposes accounted for, that person's health starts just declining. We have fatigue problems. We have memory problems. Maybe balance and coordination is going. Maybe digestion is going. Maybe they're losing their sense of smell, followed by other decrease of sensitization of other senses, followed by even other worse symptoms such as personality changes. And it can come out of the blue, or it can start creeping up over 6 months or 12 months of time. And if that's the case, it could be tied back to these hits to the head. And very smart people at Harvard started figuring this out. And it all goes back to this, primarily this inflammatory response that occurs. And that's where this 5 to 20 year thing comes from. I'm sorry, where it comes from is a multitude of factors. And it has, again, to do with the state of the person's brain and their body when it happened, and then what their life is like afterwards. If that person's life is relatively stress-free, not a care in the world, let's say they don't really have any day-to-day pressures, probably going to be okay. But if it's like everyone else, or for the most part, everyone else in this world, where we have people to take care of, or jobs to do, or whatever it might be, responsibilities, those are stressors. And you add that in with all these other physiological fun things we talked about, this is where people's health can really decline after hits to the head. And this is why we see fighters and boxers, football players, and other individuals who had many hits to the head suffer with degrading health or personality changes, or even worse, suicide. One of the most heartfelt cases that really kind of touches for myself, or a couple of them, is Junior Seau. Junior Seau was an amazing football player, and he suffered a lot of hits to the head over his career. He took his own life, and he took his own life in a way to preserve his brain, and he noted, and he said, I want my brain studied for this to be better understood as to what my brain is doing, and what can you learn from this to help other people. And so then this brought up, this really started bringing up the concept of CTE, or chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is where we have multiple hits to the head, and we have individuals that are having personality changes, and they're drinking and cussing and being jerks and doing things they normally don't do, and they have all these physical symptoms, yet they still get paid $30 million a year to go play a sport, so they have that pressure, and they have to go do that. What about Aaron Hernandez? That was a one that was producer Nick's shaking his head. Lots of hits to the head. Aaron's case is a little different. There's other factors that we don't need to talk about, but he had lots of hits to the head. He had this history of growing up, call it just in not a good area, the ghetto, the hood, whatever you might want to call it. After a few hits to the head in the big leagues, he starts buying guns and going and cruising in drop-top convertibles in the hood and starting getting in trouble. Why one would waste their life after making it to the NFL to do that, it doesn't make sense. And it doesn't make sense because he had CTE. Another one that kind of hit for me is in the 90s, I grew up watching the X Games evolve. The X Games are really cool for BMX and rollerblading and skateboarding and now snowboarding, all this stuff, Winter X Games. One of the guys that completely trumped the field of BMX and probably still holds records today. And it really broke my heart when I was a kid, when this happened, was Dave Mira. Dave Mira was a BMX rider. And for instance, Dave came down on, I believe it was a half pipe, so hard. He came straight down on this from 15 feet up, landed straight on his head. He came so hard, he lacerated his liver. I mean, how do you rip an organ that is encased in connective tissue that only NASA would like to mimic, and held in by ribs. Maybe it was the ribs that ripped it. I don't know. Anyway, he underwent so much trauma to his head that his wife at the time said, you know, the last couple of years were really intense. And when you're in that stressful situation with someone with massive personality changes and their life is falling apart, you're just trying to do your best to help them because you love them and you want to support them. And she just said, and it didn't necessarily cross her mind that it could have happened, but he took his own life. And he took his own life because he was probably going insane from what he was experiencing on the inside of his head, let alone the fact that no one understood what was going on with him. So then what I want to wrap this up with is this kind of goes back to our topic about how do you get help for concussions? Concussions are hard. We don't have the best understanding in traditional medicine with concussions, and this is where parents or people might need to seek alternative help. They might need to go to functional neurologists or chiropractors with training in concussions, or doctors with training in concussions and rehabilitation. And for those, there's people that I'm sure listening who see a concussion specialist, and they've probably been maybe seeing them for 5, 10, 20 years. And those concussion specialists are going to help manage your symptoms by, okay, let's go back to vestibular therapy. Let's button this up again. Okay, here's this drug or this new drug came out, and that's all fine. But then even for sending you out to the vestibular therapist or the PT to get some help, that goes right back to a lot of people are lacking the training and the knowledge for standards of concussion. For instance, people are still running standards of concussion from about 2010, not even knowing that there was an ICC that occurred in 2016, and then another international consensus conference in 2022 that new guidelines have been set and that are hardly a year old at this point. So it can be tricky, but in my opinion, and it's going to be biased, hopefully you can find a functional neurologist to get the best help for a concussion, because most of our research and direction has been going that way. And when it comes to a brain that needs to be rehabbed from a hit to the head, functional neurologists might be one of the better practitioners to seek out, because the whole point of functional neurology is knowing that every brain is different and every brain's rehabilitation is going to be different, and coming up with that custom tailored approach is exactly what we do, and it might be just what you need. But hope you got a lot out of this, and do not take hits to the head lightly. And if anyone needs help finding someone or needs some help, you can always reach out. On the show page there, there's ways of contacting, which will get to me. Otherwise, you can have my email personally, dralex@hmofunctionalcare.com. We're not here to sell you on coming to Kansas City or come to Kansas City, or if you're in Kansas City, come on in and get help with your concussion. That's not the case. If we can facilitate your care and get you in the right direction, that's what we're here for. Talk to you guys later. All right, everyone, the Dr. Alex Show is brought to you by Apex Energetics, apexenergetics.com. First of all, to learn more about Apex Energetics, head on over to that website. If you want to get Apex Energetics directly, please call them 1-800-736-4381, or you can shop our online store. You can get to our online store at myhcpstore.com. Username is Dr. Alex. Otherwise, if you'd like to find a doctor that uses Apex Energetics, you can give them a call or go to the website and they'll direct you to a doc in your area that should be doing very good work with Apex Energetics. Apex has just been instrumental in our lives professionally and personally. About 6 years ago, we went through one of the most hellacious traumas that you can think of. And if it weren't for Apex with their stress support line of products, I probably would not be here. Point blank, period. And in the office, making the switch from other lines to Apex Energetics has sped up our results with our patients, supporting them through their healthcare needs, probably by 25%, if not more. And when it comes to Apex Energetics, we just want to remind everyone that we are here to not cure diseases, making claims. We're here supporting people, increasing their healthcare needs, and helping them achieve their goals. ApexEnergetics.com. The Dr. Alex Show is hosted by myself, a nerd, Dr. Alex Nelson. I'm a chiropractor, board certified in functional neurology and childhood neurodevelopmental disorders. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your other favorite podcast apps. The Dr. Alex Show is a production of Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.